show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Looky here, a minute past the hour of 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone on this, the 7th day of February, 2013. Of course, on parts of the planet, it's already February the 8th, 2013. We have to constantly take that into account. And as such, very happy birthday wishes go out to our very own John Fox. This is The Horn. Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, available to you at the website itself under the Listen Live button, also available to you on a wide variety of streaming platforms, including, but not limited to, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, the Tuner Internet Radio app for in the iTunes Store, dar.fm, streama.com, Roku devices, and, of course, the podcasting address for the RSS, for the feed is always available to you at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this year program. Yeah, you can also get the podcast at iTunes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is, in fact, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I think we have our thorns, as it were. No, I don't think we're going to have any problem at all finding those. What a weird, weird day it has already been. I followed it through most of the day, but I have not seen the resolution of the problem with, well, I don't know if there's a resolution with the problem with the Los Angeles Police Department or the guy who's doing the shooting. I don't know if a resolution has yet been had. But that was a fascinatingly bizarre thing to watch take place over the course of the day. That is by far, however, not all. If you follow my Twitter feed, you will know that earlier today I posted a picture of some Code Pink activists being active outside the Dirksen Senate office building in advance of the confirmation hearings for John Brennan to be the head of the CIA. It's always inspiring to see the First Amendment trying to remain alive as something more than a life support system for the religion industry. And they did not disappoint, Code Pink. It is a damn shame that there were not 10,000 people in front of the Dirksen Senate office building instead of the small handful of activists who were there. The confirmation hearings were being held today, of course, for John Brennan to be the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. It is not a job I would want. It is not a job I admire. In fact, you could make the argument that a central intelligence agency is directly contrary to any sort of founding notions that attended the creation of this country. But as our friend over at Crooks and Liars, Susie Madrak, points out, God bless the brave and brilliant ladies of Code Pink who were apparently the only people attending the Senate confirmation hearing for CIA nominee John Brennan, willing to stand up against the horrors of drones and of torture. To wit, this. Well, you know, as soon as the ad gets done, I'll be glad when we get pay internet. I had it queued up. These things happen. Here we go.
I'm going to ask that this room be cleared right now. With the Capitol Police, please come in and clear the room. Please clear the room. Please clear the room. All right, I think we should clear the entire room and then let people back in.
And I'm very pleased to be joined today by my wife, Kathy, and my brother, Tom.
I speak for the mothers.
All right, we will stop again. If you could please expedite the removal. Please proceed. Mr. Brennan, the next time we're going to clear the chamber and bring people back in one by one.
You don't know who they are. I have a list. I have a list of all the names and the
ages. All right. We're going to halt the hearing. I'm going to ask that the room be cleared and that the Code Pink associates not be permitted to come back in. Done this 5 times now, and 5 times are enough.
Yeah, by God, 5 times are enough. How dare they speak out against extrajudicial killings, against war waged by wire? How dare they? Every day it seems we get a little closer to one or another scene from Dr. Strangelove. Gentlemen, I'm shocked. I've never seen such behavior fighting in the war room. I mean, what is this country, really, what has this country come to if we cannot have a nice, civil confirmation hearing so that a man can go on and get back to work and go about the business of slaughtering children in their sleep? Honestly, decorum has been deeply violated. Right? Because that is how empire behaves. We may be sending out drone strikes that will murder some mother's child in her cradle, but when it comes time to not talk about it, we want to not talk about it in very polite terms. And we don't need the hoi polloi getting all uppity and acting as if they have some sort of greater moral sense of right and wrong. Than do our betters. Right? Yeah. I walked over, I took a couple of pictures. I tweeted a couple of pictures. Big models of drones out on the sidewalk. A bullhorn. Some chanting. A relatively tiny handful of people in what yet remains a brisk and somewhat bitter cold on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and I had to contemplate the essence of the problem here. One, we have a nation that is deeply asleep, thinking it has done its job. It pushed back against the idea of having a Mormon bishop, a prince of the Mormon church, for a president of the United States, reelected Barack Obama, and now thinks the work is done and we can get back to the business at hand of sitting on our couches and whiling away our lives. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, we did stop Bishop Romney. And Bishop Romney would, well, what would the difference be between Bishop Romney's drone policy and this administration's drone policy? Bishop Romney's drone policy would probably be even bloodier. But this one is bloody enough. But I had to sort of drill down a little further in my own thinking. I had to understand the difference between the conceptualization of right and wrong as understood by Code Pink and the conceptualization of right and wrong as understood by, for instance, policy wonks who make white papers and Justice Department lawyers who make arguments in favor of the slaughter of potential innocents and decisions made in the dark and still of the night by faceless bureaucrats about who lives and who dies. I had to consider the cognitive dissonance, and it goes beyond dissonance, the cognitive breakdown that happens between A, folks like Code Pink, folks like you, folks like me, who understand the essential wrongness of the drone program, and people like Dianne Feinstein, who can blithely consider such a thing and then go to some lovely lunch. Because, you see, elegant answers that are simple and elegant are quite frequently the ones that are most likely to be correct. And the simple and elegant answer, and in fact an answer that is in line with the underlying founding principles of this nation, is that we ought not be at war in any of any sort in that region. Now, granted, historically, we threw those concepts out the window almost immediately. Think about Mr. Jefferson having sent the fledgling U.S. Navy to operate against the Barbary pirates. Right? A couple of years later, wasn't it, we signed a treaty that acknowledged, among other things, that the United States is in no wise founded upon the Christian religion. It was ratified by the United States Senate. Yeah. But the most elegant and simple answer is that we ought not be waging war of any sort in the Middle East. That we should leave the Middle East alone. If we insist on doing business in the Middle East, we do business, but not at the muzzle of a gun or the warhead of a Hellfire missile mounted under the wing of a drone. That is the simple and most elegant answer. But it is an answer that utterly evades people inside the power structures, the elite deciders of things. I'm their decider. The silly man who said that is gone, but the attitude that created it persists. because don't be at war does not exist in the universe of possible choices. For this issue, it's bedeviling to say the least. White House spokesman Jay Carney described the drone program as being wise. I would submit to you that there is not an iota of wisdom about it. Every Hellfire missile that finds a target, even if it's the right target, the wrong target, an indiscriminate target, some target composed of flesh and blood, every Hellfire missile that finds its target creates in its combustion determination for someone that they will oppose the United States, that they will war against the United States in whatever means possible. Whenever possible. Drone strikes create new hatreds of the United States the way that a breeze can reseed a field with seeds borne on the wind from a single dandelion puffball. And that's the reality. But in the minds of the powerful, in the minds of the elite, in the minds of those people who live in a fantasy world of black and white, a world of nothing but stark dualities, the concept of not making war for a state dependent upon it is lost, simply lost. And instead, the decisions are between, shall we use these here drones, which put no American lives at risk, or shall we put troops on the ground or pilots into cockpits? Operational SEAL squads delivered into regions under dark and still and cover. Those are the only two choices. And when those are the only two choices, the drones look pretty doggone good. At least from our standpoint, no harm, no foul. At least not to us. And we, of course, being the United States, feel, what? Anointed by God to kill whomever needs a good killing? Right? But that's where the breakdown comes. If you assume that there is going to be war, you merely consider which method of warfare provides the most insulation to American interests. And you wind up with drones. You have to be able to consider and really, really take into your being the idea of a yearning for peace before the idea of not bombing some child in her cradle in the dark and still of the night becomes a viable option. with the subject line titled, Again, Clayton, the militant sociologist, asks, how do we build the empire if we don't kill some women and children? And of course, these people don't value life like we do. And there you go. All of that said, of course, with tongue deeply in cheek. I guess if I were to take issue with anything you've written, Clayton, I would say it's not a matter of building the empire. The empire is built. The empire has been built for a very, very long time. Its roots run deep. So deep as to be probably inimical to any actual democracy. The empire is built. The question is, how do we maintain the empire? Because once you've got an empire, you have to spend all your time keeping it alive. Because empires, almost from their very inception, by their very nature, even if it looks like they're healthy, they're constantly teetering and tottering on the brink of self-ruin. Because while some empires are taken down from outside, most of them destroy themselves. So it's not about building it. It's about maintaining that incredibly delicate balance that keeps an empire on the brink instead of over sending it over into the abyss. And you can't make an omelet if you don't break some eggs, and you can't maintain an empire if you don't blow away a few babies in their cradles. So I reject the duality of which would you rather have, drones or 10,000 soldiers on the ground. That's a false dichotomy. It's a false choice. The question is, which would you rather have? War or no war? But thanks to Code Pink for at least inconveniencing the likes of Dianne Feinstein. Who looks normal enough on the outside, but if you were able to view her soul or whatever that is, it would look like something from that scene in Carrie. You know the one I'm talking about. Please pardon the longer than usual pauses from time to time. I woke up this morning and I am sneezing like crazy. I hope I'm not getting sick. And I'm beginning to feel like somebody turned me upside down in my sleep and poured concrete in my sinuses. It's not a good sign. Oh, by the way, this in from Dr. John. He points out that a piece by Jeff Biggers, our good friend, has just gone up at Huffington Post. Reintroduced AIC Act is the no-brainer bill of the year. Will Congress finally deal with this health emergency? Jeff is a brilliant and beautiful writer. With the daily silica-laced blizzard from 5 million pounds of toxic explosives in the background, U.S. Representative John Yarmuth and Representative Louise Slaughter reintroduced the biggest no-brainer bill of the year for Congress, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. Viewing its 40-year rap sheet and 20 peer-reviewed academic studies on the devastating health impacts of mountaintop removal, the job-killing mechanized form of strip mining that only provides 5 to 7% of all U.S. coal production, the AIC Act simply asks Congress to do what it should have done back in 1971, place a moratorium on new mountaintop removal mining, while the first comprehensive federal study of the health dangers is conducted. Yes, says Jeff Biggers, a no-brainer. Especially when big coal, like the Patriot Coal Company, now recognizes the health crisis from mountaintop removal and agrees to phase out large-scale operations, and support for the bill comes from big green groups like the Sierra Club and Earth Justice, and religious groups like Christians for the Mountains. Kentucky Representative Yarmuth kept it simple. If it can't be proven that mountaintop removal mining is safe, we shouldn't allow it to continue. If President Obama and the U.S. Congress are committed to keeping the children in the hills of Appalachia or the coal country in the Navajo Nation, the heartland and west for that matter, always safe from harm, quote-unquote, as he noted in his inaugural address, they need to wake up and deal with the daily reality of terrifying birth defect rates, cancer risks, chronic cardiovascular diseases, and even fly rock on our nation's most vulnerable citizens. Kids. The U.S. Geological Survey has advised us not to eat the vegetables or fruits from our gardens because toxic fallout from mountaintop removal blasting has contaminated our soil, said Antrim Kasky, founder of Appalachia Watch in Rock Creek, West Virginia, and member of the AIC campaign. We need swift passage of the AIC Act. I have fought the impacts of mountaintop removal on my home and health for 18 years, added Maria Gano. Now science is showing that it's killing me and my community, and Congress needs to listen. Cancer here is as common as the cold. The fact is, this is not about who is winning, it is about who is dying from the violent impacts of mountaintop removal. Representative Slaughter, a New Yorker raised in Harlan County, Kentucky, and the nation's only microbiologist serving in the U.S. Congress, spelled it out. Every American has a right to live and work in a community free from environmental health risks. And it is our duty to ensure that this right is not infringed upon by industries that consider community health and environmental protection to be less important than their profit margins. Appalachia has not cornered the marketing on coal mining misery. Industrial strip mining got its birth in my Illinois woods, says Jeff Biggers, in the 1850s, and after 150 years of nonstop plunder of our farms, forests, and communities, the heartland is now facing an unabashed coal rush. Last month, Diné, Navajo residents traveled to Peabody Energy headquarters to remind the nation of a half-century of destruction and corruption on Black Mesa. The largest strip mine in the east is now expanding unfettered by regulations across Indiana. The colossal Powder River Basin in the west is ramping up its efforts to export to the Asian markets. In the 20-odd states beholden to strip mining, Congress would be wise to create a coal fields regeneration fund like Great Britain to jumpstart clean energy manufacturing and transition coal mining communities into sustainable economies. In the meantime, the AIC Act is the first step in addressing the long overdue health costs in Appalachia and hopefully beyond. The failure to do so, as President Obama referred to the threat of climate change, would betray our children and future generations. And that is why Jeff Biggers is so damned good at what he does. Albeit some of you may be saying, wait a minute, Bob, you were talking about drone strikes. Hold on, buddy. There we were talking about drone strikes and how immoral drone strikes are, and then you just wander off talking about mountaintop removal. I don't just do things. That was no accident. You see, I feel a certain kinship with a Yemeni mother or father who goes to sleep at night wondering if their child will be alive in the morning. or whether they all will have been obliterated in some godforsaken drone blast. I feel a certain kinship. Because the same sort of existential questions plague those who are paying attention in Appalachia every day. I don't know how many pounds of high explosives go into a Hellfire missile, but I know it's damn sure not 5.5 million. Lucky for us, we haven't figured out a way to build an aircraft that can hoist that much ordnance just yet. Although I suppose we've got ballistic missiles that produce megatons of explosive force. There's more similarity there than meets the eye. And I think we would do well to not hair split between an individual, a baby blasted in its cradle, and a baby poisoned in its. Because the end result, grim death, is the same. And I guess had I engaged them, and I had no interest in doing so because I didn't want to pee on anybody's parade, but I guess that's the question one would have to put to Code Pink. And not meanly, not disrespectfully. But the question is this. If a nation is willing to either actively perform or sit idly by while its own citizens are blasted and poisoned, what in God's name makes us think they're going to get all misty-eyed about someone different, someone the other, 8,000 miles away? My friends, my neighbors, my colleagues, my family are faceless others to the vast majority of this nation. And we're only faceless others because we're hillbillies. We're faceless others, and yet we're clothed in large part in what we are told is the near magic status of white privilege. But I can tell you, that not all white privilege is created equal. We're forgettable. Appalachia is forgettable. The Diné people of the Black Mesa in Arizona are forgettable. Past forgettable, you have to have first been aware of them before you can forget them. We are all ignorable, expendable. In the southern Illinois heartland that Jeff Biggers writes about so eloquently in Reckoning at Eagle Creek, they are ignorable too. If you happen to be in the way of something that capitalism and the economy, so to speak, want in this country, if you happen to be living on top of it or around it or among it, no matter where you are on this planet, the money will figure out a way to marginalize you or kill you to get at that perceived wealth. When there is not a seam of coal on this planet with 1/1,000,000th of the inherent potential of even 1 oppressed human being. Isn't that true? Don't the facts bear this out? Do we even remember why we are in South Asia anymore? I mean, it's really kind of hard to call Afghanistan the Middle East now, isn't it? We know there are some hydrocarbons involved, right? Just as hydrocarbons are involved in Appalachia or the Powder River Basin or southern Illinois or on the Black Mesa or in Bangladesh or in India or in Pakistan or in China. Right? Dr. John writes in, he says, drone strikes, subject line, drone strikes into MTR. Yes, all caps. It's all connected. Just as Michael Moore makes clear and elegant links between gun violence and U.S. militarism in Bowling for Columbine. The same cold calculation of profit, the same sense that the other can suffer so long as it doesn't happen to the privileged, is part of why mountaintop removal and militarism are allowed to continue. So I would suggest that if your urge is for world peace, if you think that a mother should be able to put her infant to bed in Afghanistan without wondering whether or not the house will be there the next morning, if that is indeed your goal, then in point of fact, let's start here at home. It is not to say that one person is more valuable than another. No, a million times no. It is, however, to say that a mirror held up to our own faces will often show us more than we expected to see. Right? Ron in Raleigh writes in, subject line, bullies. Hey, Bob. Hey, Ron. The Grand Ayatollah leader of Iran today stated that he will not negotiate with a gun to his head. The U.S. is insisting, just as we insisted about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that Iran is trying to get a nuke. So we install massive, painful sanctions against a country on the suspicion that they may at some point in the future try to make a single nuclear weapon. We've been saying this about Iran for at least 15 years. The drone strikes are very similar to the sanctions, except that we can see the death. I frankly don't see how the drone murders can stop. Anyone we consider to be plotting against America is a legit, and that's America with a K, is a legitimate target for death anywhere in the world. However, that's not true if Al-Qaeda would just move their operational headquarters to, say, London, or Paris, or Rome. How many Hellfire missiles would rain down upon those white cities? We and Israel have become the biggest do-as-we-say bullies on the world stage. This is the newest installment of Manifest Destiny. The blowback from this is going to be horrific. I'm just glad I'll be long dead when the countries we're abusing develop the wherewithal to take their revenge. Marty with a slight modification to what I said a moment ago. Not more than we expected to see, Bob. Looking in the mirror, we see more than we want to see. Twenty minutes before the hour, I want to extend a very special thank you for a contribution that just came in. We are one-third of the way now toward what we need to raise on any given night of the program. We try to raise $150. That's all. $10 from 15 people, $15 from 10 people. We just got a $50 contribution in. And 10 more people at $10, and we will have raised the funds we need for this evening. To be quite honest, I've been away from home for something approaching 3 weeks now. And it's going to be a merry chase when we get back just to get everything paid. So thanks for the kind contribution. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Can you be a force multiplier for the help we just received? It would be wonderful. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. About 19 before the hour. Oh, and whatever this is, yeah, I can't stop sneezing and so please bear with me through the course of the evening. I appreciate it. No, there's more drone stuff out there to be contemplated. And contemplate it we shall. A little reminder, though, that we do try to do some conversation here. We are away from the phone lines that usually provide the easy access to the program. But I think we've got the audio to Skype at tolerable levels, or tolerable functionality. The Skype handle is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you go and search for just Bob Kincaid, you will not find the program. You need to search Bob Kincaid Horn, and that'll get you in touch with the program if we're not already friend it up on Skype. Send a contact request, and I will approve it lickety-split. It's Thursday, of course, and we've got a Green News report coming in the offing. But since we've been dealing with some rather heavy stuff, it's nice to take a little bit of a giggle break before we get back on our heads. You know that really, really smarmy, crappy, worn-out Dodge commercial from the Super Bowl that featured the voiceover of the man that our buddy Bart Kopp refers to as the old horse molester, Paul Harvey? Good. I guess it got some traction with some people, because it touched on things that we like to still believe about ourselves, you know, as opposed to believing that in the 21st century we are a nation who uses unmanned aerial vehicles to wipe out babies in their sleep. It's much easier to believe that you know, farmers are the salt of the earth and the sons of the old sod, and right, when in fact the farmers that Paul Harvey was talking about when he made that original speech back in 1967 were already on their way out. Well, bless their hearts, the folks at Funny or Die have put up a sort of a bubble-off plum approach to that dumbass God Made a Farmer ad. Check it out.
And on the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need a caretaker. So God made a farmer. And back when America was founded, 90% of the population were farmers. But now, it's less than 1%. So God made a factory farm. And then God wanted to maximize yield. So God made pesticides and herbicides, and genetically modified seeds that are resistant to those chemicals. And God let Monsanto patent those seeds. And God said, sometimes agribusiness grows crops that no one needs, but they still want to get paid. So God made farm subsidies. And then God noticed, there sure is a massive corn surplus out there. So God made high fructose corn syrup. And God said, well, now we've got to do something with all this corn syrup. So God made Mountain Dew, and Cookie Crisp, and Gushers. And then God said, okay, now it just seems like Americans aren't willing to do farm labor anymore. So God made Mexicans. And God said, granted, the American agricultural industry has evolved into a manufacturing giant that's more like Walmart than a mom-and-pop store, and it's backed by powerful interest groups that spend hundreds of millions lobbying Congress. But despite all that, the word farmer still evokes salt-of-the-earth American Gothic imagery. And from a marketing standpoint, that would be a helpful thing to associate with an automaker that nearly went bankrupt due to mismanagement. So God made this commercial. God, farmers.
Thank you.
It's Thursday, February 7, 2013.
She's shown that a company with more than $1 billion in sales can do the right thing for our planet.
Obama nominates REI CEO for Interior.
Please be prepared. Winter Storm Nemo is gearing up as we speak.
Historic nor'easter heading for the northeast. Historic low water levels in the Great Lakes. Ben and Jerry's junks GMOs. Plus, the EPA's list of the nation's biggest polluters in your backyard.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
You once spent a month climbing mountains in Antarctica, which is just not something I think of doing. Because it seems like it'd be cold. And I was born in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, sure you were, Mr. Quote President. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen. Here we go again. Another major storm in the Northeast.
Yep, it's weather whiplash.
We do have blizzard advisories. Winter storm watches have been issued, so please be prepared. But then after that, you'll be kind of on the backside of Nemo, and that's when the snow will really start to pick up.
The Weather Channel is warning of another potentially historic nor'easter blizzard to hit Manhattan and Boston this weekend with hurricane-force winds, up to 2 feet of snow, and, quote, serious coastal flooding around Boston and Cape Cod. On the plus side, the storm will bring crucial precipitation to the region after last year's record warm winter that wasn't. Travel will be extremely dangerous, so stay safe out there. Meanwhile, in the Midwest, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced this week that water levels in Lake Michigan and Lake Huron are now at the lowest levels ever recorded. That's since record-keeping began 100 years ago. And it's due to more than a decade of below-normal rainfall and also because of the legacy of man-made dredging projects back in the 1960s. Out in the arid west, a new report forecasts that the flow of the Colorado River, the major water supply for seven states, will be at 54% below normal this summer, also due to persistent drought. Those extremes in weather brought to you by climate change.
Says you.
In Asia, the world's third largest paper company will stop destroying Indonesia's rainforest. The Forest Trust, a nonprofit organization, has succeeded in convincing Asia Pulp and Paper to halt all clear cutting of natural rainforest in Indonesia, effective immediately. And some good news for the organics industry, too. Premium ice cream maker Ben and Jerry's has announced it will phase out genetically modified ingredients in all of its products this year.
Does that include chunky genetically modified monkey?
Ew!
I just ask the tough questions.
They also now support GMO labeling on all foods, saying they were convinced by data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that shows farmers' use of herbicides actually increases dramatically with GMO crops. They say, quote, we are not seeing the promise that GMO seeds were supposed to deliver. Is there a polluter in your backyard? The EPA has released its list of the top greenhouse gas polluters in the United States, as mandated by Congress. The new data show that power plants are the top stationary sources of greenhouse gas emissions in the United States, accounting for 45% of our nation's CO2. And for the first time ever, the EPA added emissions from oil, gas, and coal operations to its online greenhouse gas tracking tool. They show that fracking is now the second biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the nation. Save the polluters in your backyard. We've got the links at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
Can you actually go and look up your house and see how close the polluters are to you?
Yes.
Cool.
Finally, President Obama has nominated the CEO of the outdoor retailer, REI, Sally Jewell, as new Secretary for the Department of the Interior to replace Ken Salazar and oversee over 500 million acres of public lands.
Sally has helped turn a stalling outdoor retailer into one of America's most successful and environmentally conscious companies.
Sally Jewell is a former oil engineer turned commercial banker for oil projects, which might help gain support from Republicans. She then spent the last 8 years at REI.
I have a great job at REI today, but there's no role that compares than the call to serve my country as Secretary of the Department of Interior.
Both environmental groups and the oil and gas industry expressed cautious optimism that she would, if confirmed, balance competing stakeholders between oil and gas extraction on public lands versus the public's use of public lands. That's REI's core business.
As a member of REI myself, I'm encouraged about her becoming Interior Secretary because if things don't work out, we'll be able to return her, no questions asked, get all our money back.
Just like REI's return policy.
For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please help us celebrate our 10th year of troublemaking and muckraking. Consider a donation or a purchase of one of our cool new premiums. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Because you know that a
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
About 4 minutes before the hour. Gosh, we've got extra time. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Our last night in D.C., at least for a while. Heading home tomorrow. The ambition is to be home in time to get a show up and running for Friday on the front porch. Because this, on the other hand, is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Now, we want to be home in time to get a show going Friday night. I hope we will. As the old saying goes, watch this space. Depending on how it all shakes out, I will tweet and Facebook and do what I can to give as much advance warning as I can. If you do Twitter, if you do Facebook, the address is the same, Bob Kincaid. It's that simple, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. And just follow the feed, follow the timeline, and I will update as much and as often as I possibly can. Now, where were we? Actually, I know. Being as how it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and being as how we've been talking about drones, this story seemed particularly apropos. It's being reported more in the foreign press than it is in the American press, although it did start out with a report in the New York Times. It's another one of those moments where you realize that we do not have a free press among the for-profit media in this country. It turns out, now the story itself has to do with the fact that for the last 2 years or so, the United States has been operating a secret drone base out of Saudi Arabia. And that secret drone base was used, among other things, for killing people in Yemen. I mean, drones, after all, only have a certain range, right? That's the basic story. The other story, as Paul Harvey would have, the rest of the story, lies in the fact that the U.S. has been maintaining a secret drone base in Saudi Arabia. I imagine a lot of little lights are going on right now throughout the Horn family with people saying, wait, what? Air base? Saudi Arabia? Didn't we learn a little lesson about that? Or at least that's where my tiny mind went. Because while a lot of people were caught up, and some were deliberately misled in the aftermath of September the 11th, 2001, in the fury and furor to go and exact some form of retribution in the Muslim world for what happened on that dark day, it is worth remembering that a letter went out ostensibly from Osama bin Laden, saying that the reason for the attacks of September 11, 2001, were because the United States was maintaining air bases on sacred Saudi sand. Remember? Do we also remember that the George W. Bush administration, immediately having been told of that fact, moved with real dispatch to shutter the bases on the sacred Saudi sand? I remember that. You remember that. And yet some policy genius, some deeply degreed analyst or strategist somewhere along the way said, you know, in the CIA, mind you, you know what we need? We need us a secret drone base in Saudi Arabia on that sacred Saudi sand. We are, as the saying goes, back. Over at the Telegraph, in the UK, which, yes, I recognize has its own ethical issues, and it's a Murdoch paper, right? Nonetheless, the Telegraph reporting, it only came to light after a blackout on... See, that's the second story. The first pilotless CIA mission flown from the base... the secret drone base on the sacred Saudi sand, killed Anwar al-Awlaki, a U.S.-born cleric and senior figure in al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and a deputy in September 2011, reports said. Then another Predator drone strike took out his American citizen son, Abdul Rahman, a few weeks later. That was one of those instances where our government, the government of we, the people, out here struggling every day to form a more perfect union, said, well, we didn't mean to. We weren't trying to extrajudicially eliminate a 16-year-old American citizen without due process of law who had no apparent ties to any terroristic activity. We didn't mean to do that. We just kind of did. It's one of those moments that sends you reeling back to the first day of the first semester of the first year of law school when some gravelly-voiced torts professor tells you and teaches you to recite as if some sort of catechism that all liability is based upon fault. And I didn't mean to, from the time of King God knows who the witch in England has not served as a justifiable defense for maiming or killing someone. Didn't mean to. Blimey, I didn't mean to lop his arm off with me sword. We was only practicing. And we're sorry. All liability is based upon fault. You will have to make recompense. Right? Here's the understory. Here's the actual indictment. Once we get past the moral horrors of droning away, here is the indictment. The Washington Post said several U.S. media organizations knew of the drone base, but abided by official requests. Abided is an interesting verb to use in this context, but abided by official requests not to disclose its location because of the risk to counterterrorism cooperation with Saudi Arabia. Shall we translate the Orwellian doublespeak there? I think we can. Oh, by the way, thanks to Jan, I appreciate it. It's the Times, not the Telegraph, that Murdoch owns. Thank you, I feel a little better. Do let's unravel the doublespeak. Counterterrorism cooperation with Saudi Arabia means that the royal house of Ibn Saud gave us permission to put a secret drone base on the sacred Saudi sand with the understanding that it would damned well stay a secret here, and they, using the methods that are not quite as, refined as those used here, would make sure it stayed a secret in Saudi Arabia, lest they have a few thousand or maybe a million people in the streets clamoring to, remove the Saudi king's head from the Saudi king's shoulders for having allowed us infidels to defame their sacred sand. With me so far? Because we should remember that the government of Saudi Arabia, while a dear, dear friend of the government of the United States, the kingdom, so-called, is nothing but a gang of Arabist nouveau rich thugs. And they rule their country accordingly. But they've got oil, Bob. Oh, that they do, and we'll put up with just about anything if somebody's got some oil. We'll F ourselves if somebody's got some oil they can get to us. Right? Yeah. So, rather than doing the job of journalism, rather than serving as a guardian against despotism, rather than fulfilling its role as the fourth estate, newspapers like the Post and the New York Times said, why, yes, we'll collaborate. Why, yes, we'll cooperate. Absolutely, we'll comply. Will you scratch us on our little tummies now? Meanwhile, the newspapers continued running advertisements and carrying coverage of an entirely vacuous quality. You want an example of the vacuousness? Don't count on me. Just go open the paper. Make no mistake, when you rise to the level of being managing editor of the Washington Post or the New York Times, you're on that social calendar, too. You're on the Christmas card list. And suddenly, that begins to develop its own intrinsic value. And maintaining status enters the calculations of whether or not one actually does one's job. Do we remember Judith Miller, stenographer for the Bush administration, who happily transcribed every filthy, mendacious piece of garbage that the Bush administration handed her in the run-up to a war that was illegal, immoral, and wound up costing 1 million people their lives? Do you remember the big oopsie of, what was it, October, November, 2004, was it? When the New York Times confessed that it had known for quite some time about George W. Bush's illegal spying operations on American citizens, but explained that it didn't want to possibly sway the election, when in fact the real explanation is that certain people who talk with their teeth clenched didn't want to be kicked off the social circuit and the Christmas card list. This is a more than fitting story for Thorn in the Side Thursday. And what's funny is that, no, it's not funny. What is at least ironic is that the two papers, the Washington Post and the New York Times, only decided to let the cat out of the bag when one paper said it was going to, and the other followed suit as quickly as possible. Because at that point in time, money became involved. Writing at the Washington Post, Greg Miller and Karen DeYoung said, "The Washington Post had refrained from disclosing the location at the request of the administration, which cited concern that exposing the facility would undermine operations against an al-Qaeda affiliate regarded as the network's most potent threat to the United States, as well as potentially damage counterterrorism collaboration with Saudi Arabia. The Post learned Tuesday night that another news organization was planning to reveal the location of the base, effectively ending an informal arrangement among several news organizations that had been aware of the location for more than a year." More than a year. Gosh, if they hadn't let the cat out of the bag, John Brennan could have stuck his hand in the air, taken an oath, and lied all over himself, just perjured himself from one end of the Dirksen Senate office building to the other. Oh, what the hell? Huh? Secret drone base in Saudi Arabia? Oh, you silly senators. Right. Sleep tight tonight, America. The for-profit media are on the job. Another example of that? Our buddy Susie Madrak over at Crooks and Liars, with a story titled, "The Washington Post Can't Even Get a Basic News Story Right." Sheesh. This one has to do with the Postal Service. Among the things that were burning up the interweb tubes yesterday was the announcement that we shall no longer have Saturday delivery service from the United States Post Office. These stories about the Post Office touch me. Because I was always taught to revere the Postal Service, invented by Benjamin Franklin, and in a tiny village in West Virginia, a young woman who would someday be my mother was the assistant postmistress. And she talked about the dedication and the diligence and the sense of honor and duty that attended being the assistant postmistress in a tiny little village in West Virginia. So the post office holds a very warm spot in my heart. And historically, I understand the profundity of the effects of having a functioning postal service. It's interesting, that motto on the post office in New York City that has become the unofficial motto of the Postal Service, neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. No more. Austerity has come to the post office. And yesterday we learned there will be no more Saturday deliveries. There are real-world consequences to that. It affects business the way business does business. But, you know, since, well, yeah, who needs Saturday? I mean, what shows up in the mail on Saturday? Well, maybe working people's paydays. Maybe a birthday card from a grandmother to a beloved granddaughter. But hell, that'll all wait till Monday, won't it? Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds, but a bunch of Republicans damned sure can. Which brings us to Susie Madrack's complaint over at Crooks and Liars. She says, the Washington Post far too frequently slants their news stories in service of a pro-conservative, pro-corporate, pro-privatization agenda, whether on purpose or through sheer carelessness, it's hard to say. But she says, this is only the latest example. The text is as follows. The financially struggling U.S. Postal Service plans to stop delivering mail on Saturdays starting August 1st, the agency is set to announce Wednesday. This means that for the first time, Americans will receive mail only 5 days a week, a significant shift for the storied mail agency that has suffered tens of billions, this is the part that is in bold, that has suffered tens of billions of dollars in losses in recent years with the advent of the Internet and e-commerce. One of the reasons I love Susie Madrack so much is that she has no patience for this sort of BS whatsoever. With her sarcasm pen fairly smoking, she says there couldn't possibly be anything more to the story. After all, everyone you know uses email, so the Internet killed it. I mean, those things you buy from eBay, another thriving Internet business, must arrive by magic, right? Now, What's the real answer? Most of you already know it. That alleged hemorrhage of money that the post office is suffering from has nothing to do with their profitability or their business model. It has to do with a poisonous piece of legislation that was deliberately inflicted upon the Postal Service by right-wing Republicans in order to kill it. There's not an organization in this country that has to fund pensions, fully cash fund pensions, 75 years out. But thanks to the Republican Party, the post office does. As a result of having to obey that miserable law, the Postal Service posted a $15.9 billion net loss for fiscal 2012. Well, that just looks terrible, doesn't it? That looks like the Postal Office can't compete. The Postal Service can't possibly be as efficient as, say, FedEx or UPS. You ever tried to send a letter by UPS or FedEx? Yeah. $9, $10, $12. But America sits around and pisses and moans about the price of a stamp that will actually move a piece of correspondence across a freaking continent in 3 days. How about that? The 2006 congressional mandate that the United States Postal Service pre-fund future retiree health benefits for the next 75 years and do so within a decade is an obligation no other public agency or private firm faces. It forces the Postal Service to pay over $5.5 billion in annual payments. That's been going on since 2007 for a $21 billion total thus far. My goodness gracious. Now, stop for a minute. Let's say you were an avaricious POS. And let's say you were a Republican. But I repeat myself. So you take all of that money and you put it in one convenient place, ostensibly for the purposes of funding retiree health care and pension benefits. And all of a sudden, there's just $21 billion laying around doing nothing. Just ask any Republican. When $21 billion in ice-cold cash sits around, it gets lonesome. It needs a Republican to give it love and spread the love and share the love, especially to other Republicans. Or maybe give it that $21 billion, maybe give it the thrill of a lifetime and let it go and ride on the Wall Street roller coaster. Jesus. And the for-profit media, the godforsaken, dumber-than-dirt Washington Post can't even sort that out. Really, thank God. Thank God that there are people like Susie Madrack out there, because Susie's actually worked in the media. Susie understands. Susie's been a real live editor. And she at least can point out these massive failings by the folks who know which fork to use with the shrimp. Email coming in. Marty noting, and wanting Saturday delivery from UPS or FedEx? Well, that costs extra, too. Because that's the thing. See, that's what happens. The government gets involved. And then the government makes it impossible for the real job creators to compete because they can't. Which reminds me of something. Which I will get at momentarily. Oh, need to make a little change here. I'm a moron. Moron Monday nomination for me ahead of schedule. All right. There. I'm visible on Skype now. Sorry about that. I thought it was already there. Time out. Sneezing. All better now. Jude pointing out, just today while listening to Pat Robertson on his CBN News Network, no kidding, this is what they state. He was talking about the Postal Service also, Bob, and how the Saturday service would be stopped, adding this, and I'm paraphrasing, Jude says. Do we really need the Postal Service? They're now so in debt and stopping Saturday's mail delivery only saves about $2 billion, that's all. He continues, everybody's using email now. You don't need to buy a stamp. All you do is type out your message. And then he laughs that odd laugh. Not a word about the mandate for the post office to pay for health insurance years ahead. Nope, not a word from the man of God. He's in on it. Far more than a worshiper of Christ, he is a worshiper of mammon. And Pat Robertson is probably praying every day for those lonely $21 billion out there sitting around in the dark, not receiving the love they so desperately deserve from a dedicated Republican. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, hey, Bob, when you remove the six-day delivery requirement, it's just the beginning. After that requirement is removed, the requirement for any certain number of delivery days is removed. If the $2 billion of savings doesn't appear, well, by God, the number of days can be further reduced. When the USPS is finally killed, who'll get that huge chunk of pension money? Retired postal workers? Huh, LOL. Precisely my point. And speaking of that, well, I'll go to that in a little bit. But speaking, there's a story I'm going to get to about the poor little bedraggled corporations that can't compete. You remember the lady from Idaho, the lawmaker from Idaho the other day who said that was just like sending Jews to the concentration camps? Yeah, the Republican Holocaust Tourette's is in full swing. Let's go to the Skype line though. I think Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
I gotcha.
Oh, listen, so, you know, I just thought I'd mention that Postal Service bill was co-sponsored by Henry Waxman. So, you know, we need to kind of spread around the damage. Because, he's a Democrat, the last I checked.
You're absolutely right. Damn, I didn't
know that. Yeah, it's a good narrative, and I'm sure it's one that, it's just that, you know, I just thought I'd correct that because it's a congressional problem. They decided to cripple the post office for whatever reason. Maybe it's to destroy the largest union. I mean, who knows? But also, though, the postmaster can't just declare Saturday is stopped legally. He has to go through Congress to actually do that. And there's already major pushbacks from the various corporations and businesses that are going to obviously suffer from this move. So, I mean, it's not really a done deal because the postmaster is not empowered to do that.
And we, you know, it's worth remembering, Sandra, that in the history of the United States, it's not until fairly recently that the postmaster stopped being one of the most singularly important members of a presidential cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Something as essential as the ability to communicate from one part of the country to another was deeply important up well into the 20th century.
But well, that was the whole idea of Benjamin Franklin. He aligned it with the citizenry knowing what's going on. So, you know, it has a really important function, but as with everything. It's just being subsumed by, you know, the sort of corporate state. I don't know how else to describe it, because it's ridiculous that the newspapers, and I listen to NPR, and not one report mentioned the pre-funding that is at the core of this story. And it is totally disgusting that you have to search high and low to get the real story for such an important institution like the Postal Service. I mean, I'm as stunned as you are that no one seems to think that they need to inform the people that, oh, by the way, this entity has to self-fund for 75 years all their retiree and health benefits within a decade. Now, if you knew that part of the story, wouldn't you be able to say, oh, well, that's not fair?
Absolutely. And you know, the funny thing is the Postal Service has even run ads on it. I mean, they bought advertising time about it, and this thing still isn't getting out there, because otherwise the Washington Post, well, I don't know, maybe the Washington Post is counter-messaging. Is that what it is, Sandra?
I guess. I mean, I don't, you know, what it speaks to is just a total bankruptcy of the media. They're not operating as honest brokers in any capacity on any issue, it seems to be. And so when you turn to the New York Times and the Washington Post, it's like, oh, so today they decided to let us know that there's a drone thing in Saudi Arabia. Well, how nice of you. You know, I mean, that is, it's just a propaganda state. You know, pick and choose. Let's ask daddy government if we can print this, yet we have, quote, protections from the Constitution. You see what I mean? I mean, it's not like, if this was like England, I'd be like, whatever. You know, you have a state organ for media, the BBC. But that's not what we have here. So it's really disturbing, because we're being told that we do have an independent media, but it's not really independent.
Well,
which is far worse than what they have in England.
Right, and it's far worse because it's so essentially dishonest.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. It's completely dishonest. That's what makes it worse.
And what drives me batty about this is, again, that thing that I come back to time and time and time again, Sandra. You know it, I know it, the Horn family knows it, but we're a relative, and the progressive, I would say the progressive side of the internet is probably largely tuned in, but it's still inside a bubble. And, you know, what happens, for instance, the drone-based story, or this Postal Service story that Susie Madrak was highlighting. What about those people who are sitting out there, and it's real to me because I actually got to drive out into the suburbs of Washington, D.C. last night. What about those people living out in the burbs who think that they can actually count on the Washington Post or the New York Times or pick a newspaper, or that they can count on CNN, or that they can count on, God forbid, Fox, although that number seems to be sinking like a stone?
What of those people?
Don't they have a rude awakening coming, Sandra, when they find out that the world is not what these organs have been telling them it is?
Well, yeah, but it's very detrimental to, you know, the body politic, because, you know, you're essentially existing in, you know, la-la land, because the information is not right. We're being told, I was listening to some of that Brennan hearing stuff, and he's talking about our partners overseas. It's like, oh, my God, our partners in torture overseas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Was really creepy.
Oh, yeah, like, partner Schmartner. No, I didn't last very long through the Brennan business at all.
Well, you know what was going on. I mean, you know, it was just really disturbing to hear Dianne Feinstein and him adjudicate the Alawi case right there.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, you know, with polite civil conversations about freaking murder.
Yeah, but if Alawi was as bad as Dianne made him out to be, well, how hell, you could have gotten an indictment on some of the shit she was saying.
Well, you know, that's the old saying obtains that a good prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich.
Well, I'm just saying, so it's really bizarre, you know. I mean, even they even indicted Bin Laden, but they couldn't indict this YouTube sensation, Alawi, and there was no mention of the unfortunate, bad-parented 16-year-old that was taken out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're told, that because he had a horrible father, that's why we killed him. That seriously was the reason that that idiot gave when he was confronted with the question about why was that 16-year-old killed.
Right, and that's, you know, that was so blithe and so disconnected from reality, Sandra, because I mean, we can look into family structures inside traditional religious households and find that in many cases, you know, daddy gets the say so over where the kid goes. I mean that was the state of affairs in the United States for a very long time. So the kid has to go with dad, so therefore the kid gets to die. I can't sort that one.
Well, no, but it's just all of it is ridiculous, and it makes no sense. And so when you hear Brennan and the senators talk about anything, you're like, well, no, none of this matters when you can't talk about this teenager that you killed. I mean, you know, what's the holdup?
Well, the holdup is that they haven't figured out a way to say, look, we've effed up real bad, we killed a teenager, and it probably calls into question the entire operational theory behind this behind this process, because that's what it does.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's interesting that there's, you know, they apparently Wyden basically threatened to hold that man's confirmation if he didn't get something about this program, which I give a lot of credit to Wyden for doing that. This is apparently the only reason why we're getting this bullshit from DOJ and Obama personally demanding that they, you know, release this, that, or and a third of their death memos, you know? So I give credit to Wyden, but, you know, one senator can't stop that murder program that...
Well, if it was... Now, wait a minute, Sandra. If it was one Republican senator, he could. I mean, I guess I'm being a little bit facetious, but...
Well, no. What I mean is that, no, Wyden didn't say he wouldn't help confirm, but he did at least threaten the White House enough where they have to cough up something. I just thought that was interesting because, you know, Obama and his people, they weren't going to say shit about it. They wanted him to be confirmed, and that was just that. And it was only because of the pushback from Wyden and, you know, maybe some of the citizens that even got this information out. And I don't know if you looked at, I hate to refer to John Stewart because I think, where am I living? But he really broke this shit down in a way that was funny and just terrifying. I don't know if you caught anything.
Yeah, I did. And it was both.
I was just like, you know, Obama might have a bit of a problem because if people start paying attention to this, because all you need to keep saying is that they can kill an American citizen without due process. And any moron can understand what the hell that means.
Well, yeah, I read the white paper, the memo, whatever. And the idea that it merely says an individual shall make a determination.
No, but when that...
Who's that individual? Obviously, that's probably the director of CIA, right?
Well, I mean, but it's ridiculous. It's not even, I mean, Obama can delegate his murder program. Also, there doesn't have to be any evidence. I mean, that was in that white paper, too. I mean, we want evidence, but we don't really have to have any. I mean, it's just incredible.
It is.
And Al-Qaeda is Al-Qaeda... You know, in the woods, Al-Qaeda in the polar ice cap, Al-Qaeda in the mountains, Al-Qaeda, you know what I'm saying? It's just... It's really...
Well, I read that memo, the part about American citizens and organizations that are, you know, supportive of... It couldn't have been written in more broad, indeterminate language, and suddenly I thought back, Al-Qaeda in the holler, you know? I suddenly thought back to the time in Beckley when I was still on terrestrial radio when the right-wingers over there would call me Bob Al-Kincaida. And I thought, dear Jesus, I hope none of those reruns run. You know, and because it, I mean, we joke, but it's terrifying. And, well, and Al-Qaeda has become something out of an Orwell novel. You're absolutely right. Al-Qaeda in the hood, Al-Qaeda on the plains.
Right.
He's everywhere. He's everywhere. He's Chicken Man.
But when you compare that to what that memo was saying, then, you know, Al-Qaeda Tarzans. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. Don't think I don't for a minute. Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, I don't know. I'm not understanding it, because warfare shouldn't be coming from the CIA anyway. It should be from the Defense Department. And it's being shifted like his own private little army, you know, Obama. So, yeah. I don't know.
Executive's own private little army. And that, you know, that, I guess I keep making the argument, and I hope people understand why. This is imperial behavior. And every emperor, even if they periodically voluntarily step down, every emperor wants to have his praetorian cohort. And at this point in time, that is what the CIA has evolved into. Because even with Congress, the CIA on some things can just thumb its nose and say, that's classified.
And I've been sort of horrified by a number of these quote liberals, you know, defending this crap, especially some of the black ones, and it's just like, OMG, you know, get out your bubble and realize that the reign of Obama is going to come to an end, and then what the fuck you going to do?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm just like, same, it ain't that
same, the
He's
same argument,
to be educated people.
The same argument I was making back in 2004 to the right-wingers, who would brook no criticism of domestic spying, who would brook no criticism of the Patriot Act. I kept asking them, and of course back then, I said, yeah, okay, you're comfortable with it because you trust George W. Bush. What are you going to do when Hillary's got those powers?
Well, speaking of that, what are you going to do when Hillary has those powers? I'm seeing Thatcher and that, I can't remember that woman in Israel, so
Golda
it's
Meir.
Not really comforting.
Yeah.
Golda Meir, is that who?
Yeah.
He's now a
cover boy, so what about when Marco Rubio has that power?
Well, and listening to that fool talk, I wasn't very comforting. I'm like, can you string a few more words together, Mr. I don't believe in climate change?
Yeah, I'm not a scientist, dude. So,
man, he just sounded like a fucking idiot. And I'm like, oh, no,
well, did you happen to read his comments on what a hip-hop fan he is?
What kind of hip-hop?
Well, see, there's that. But, no, it's... he said... I got to find it here real quick. He has a real reverence for Eminem.
Oh, I vaguely saw that, but I think I just saw it. My eyes glazed over because it was too much for my beautiful mind, so I had to...
You were halfway to pearl clutching?
Oh, my God. Speaking of that, you know, one of her grandsons, George P. Bush, is making a push. You remember him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's the one that got drunk and did donuts in his...
Somebody's room. Somebody's... Some girl's house.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you know, he was in the news talking about, oh, I was just about to meet whoever that guy was, the sniper from hell that got taken out. He was going on about a meeting he was supposed to have with that guy. And they're talking about how he's going to run for some statewide office. And I'm like, oh, no. Not another Bush.
That's what they're groomed for.
They've
got to get into office so that they can get their front feet in the trough.
No, it's too much. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention was I haven't followed through because I've been doing something else. But is that freak in the mountains now, that cop in L.A.? I'm
sorry to laugh. Well, apparently what? They said he may have crossed state lines and...
Yeah, but I had to laugh when he was saying, I know what the hell you fuckers are going to do. I know you. You know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
Like, they'll have a hard time with
Well, Isaac sent me a link to his unredacted mission statement.
Yeah, that's like, you know, calling Unabomber. I mean, what's happening?
Well, the interesting thing, though, is that he uses enough actual names and makes close enough identification that you would think this would be something that a journalist would get hold of and just try to sort of chase down.
Yeah. Well, back to what we were talking about earlier.
Right. Well, and that's the whole point. You know, don't hold your breath.
But I'm sort of, you know, them poor women. I mean, it's a bit out of control, right?
Oh.
I mean, that's terrible. I'm thinking, you know, Isaac tweeted that, you know, he was after dykes and Asians and, you know, everybody but black folks. And I'm thinking, oh, can they just catch this Negro? This is way up north.
Well, I mean, how fast is a 270-pound man going to go?
Well, no, but I mean, no, the big question is, and I hate to, you know, to sound sardonic, but oh my God, you just lost a job, fool. What's happening? you know?
I know, but with all of these things, you know, the guy at the gun range in Texas, this in California, yeah. The fact that six people were shot on Gun Appreciation Day. If we, you know, this isn't one of those situations where you have to lay your ear down on the railroad rail to tell how far away the train is. The universe is providing, you know, yarn and breadcrumbs and all kinds of clues to suggest what the nature of the problem is, and we keep looking away. See, this guy in California, this killer, the easy thing to do is, and it's already being done. Well, yeah, he's crazy. No, he's not crazy. He's homicidal.
No, listen, and you know, it just goes to the core of how many of those so-called, they kept calling them our protectors. The media spin has been just like, OMG, our protectors. And, you know, when they talk about the pigs, and I'm like, well, no, looks like, and you saw that, you tweeted that article because I read it too about the cliques and the sheriff. You know, the sort of...
Yeah, seven sheriff's deputies who are getting fired from the L.A. County Sheriff's Department
yeah.
because they were running their own little internal gang, called right. themselves the Jump Out Boys, and right. they gave yeah. each other matching tattoos, and then as soon... And it was of a skull and a skeleton
right.
holding a pointing a gun, and then as soon as you'd been in a gunfight, they would add a tattoo of smoke coming out of the barrel. Jesus Christ, Sandra...
Right, and then went to, you know, and you remember what was going on or what still is probably going on in Anaheim. So, listen, the cops are not anybody's protectors. They just seem to be state-sanctioned thugs. And one's loose and coming after one of their own. I'm like, let's just get out of the way of civilians. They can have at it. You see what I'm saying? Except for these poor women who just trying to deliver the damn paper. I mean, you know, L.A., god damn, I mean, it's quite out of control that, you know, they let the pigs run amok down there, and then one can't get his way, and he decided he's going to turn the guns on them.
And immediately we default to, he's crazy.
Oh, I'm not defaulting to nothing.
No, you're not, I'm not, we're not.
No, but the media, I understand, but I mean... It's the crazy, messed up cop culture should be addressed because obviously there's problems.
And I don't know what the answer is except to suggest that, well, obviously this guy's not going to live to, you know, the minute somebody sees him, he's a dead man. There will be no trial. There will be no execution. Well, I mean, there'll be an execution, but it's you know, just going to happen. Sort of peremptorily, I guess we should say.
Well, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I've never, that story down there is pretty, that's pretty crazy. Pretty, pretty crazy. But, oh God, I lost my train of thought. Anywho, that's about really all I got because I just was, the post office thing was just, it's just beyond disturbing and, yeah, so.
Well, I do have to share this with you before we go.
Okay.
I got a Marco Rubio gave, we got to go back to this because at least we have to have our moment of shallow and funny. He gave an interview to GQ magazine. And they asked him for his three favorite rap songs. You ready for this?
Yes.
Marco Rubio, answer. Straight Outta Compton by N.W.A., Killuminati by Tupac, Eminem's Lose Yourself. I'm not, and then he says this. There's three dots, so I guess there was something in the middle. But he says, I'm not like an athlete. The only guy that speaks at any sort of depth is, in my mind, Eminem. He's a guy that does music that talks about the struggles of addiction and before that, violence with growing up in a broken family, not being a good enough father. So, you know, that's what I enjoy about it. It's harder to listen to than ever before because I have a bunch of kids and you just can't put it on.
Sandral, are you in the bathroom?
Hello?
Yeah. I love who... whoever it was that wrote this post at Think Progress said, wait, what? Yeah, Eminem.
Yeah, okay. No accounting for taste, I guess.
Well,
yeah.
but not just that. The idea of Marco Rubio, the shiny, pasty, sexied up face of the so-called rebranded Republican Party. I mean, just what does that picture look like to conjure up him sitting around listening to Straight Outta Compton?
Well, I know it's too much. I mean, and plus he makes up, don't he make up shit about his background? Don't it change up quite a bit?
Yeah, eventually he'll wind up, his parents will have wound up being on the Nina, the Pinta, or the Santa Maria.
Oh, there is one thing I want to mention. Did you happen to see, I don't know if you had a chance, but there was a story in the New York Times, a short article about some cradle-to-grave program. Did you happen to see that?
No, what?
It's a program that they're using to show young kids, you know, what happens with out-of-control gun violence, sort of like Scared Straight.
I don't think it's the kids we have to scare.
No, but they only have these programs for, you know, brown and black children.
Yeah, well,
and I'm thinking, well, those poor kids are already traumatized enough.
Those are the kids who are dying.
Programs.
Those are the
I
kids,
hate those programs.
Yeah, those are the kids who are dying. Can we have a program for, you know, for the children of prepper mommy and daddy white folks?
Well, no, it's just, you know, that article is really disturbing because it's like they always, you know, have no problem scarring brown and black kids because I guess they think that, well, they live in a violent area, so, you know what I mean? But it's just completely ass backwards. They need to have some healing circles and some counseling. That's what they fucking need.
Yeah, that would be a nice start. Or actually doing something about the fact that Michelle Obama is now on her way to the funeral of a 15-year-old girl who performed at the Obama inauguration and a week later was gunned down in a park in Chicago.
Right. I mean, you know, where you have to sort of, you know, be a general laying a strategy to get fucking home from school every day.
Yeah, never walk in a straight line, never take the same route twice.
I don't think they need to see shot up people in hospitals and stuff like that. I don't know.
Whoever,
too much.
Yeah, whoever came up with that needs to stop having that job.
Well, they only do that for, like I said, brown and black kids. They're not going to show that to, I'm sorry to say, the Sandy Hook areas. They're not going to show
kids. And you know what? They're not going to show it in the hills and hollers of Lily White, West Virginia, either. Mm. You know, because we're hillbillies and we know how to handle our guns.
Mm. Okay, well, anyway, I didn't mean to leave on that note, but it just was in my mind. I just thought, you know, it's these sort of tried and true things that they keep subjecting traumatized young people to. You know, it's too much. It's time for a change. Definitely.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sandra, it's good to hear from you, and you have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Take care.
All right, see you. Bye now. Sandra calling in on the Skype line. She mentioned the drone hearing today. Of course, we were talking about that at some length. And on the one hand, Sandra's absolutely right, because it was, you know, it was pressure that was brought to bear that actually even got the information out that came out. But the other side of it is that the sneezing's got to go. The other side of it, though, is what isn't out. And the fact that you get the idea that this was a matter of going through the motions. And then there's this, which I just find utterly repulsive, disgusting, shameful. This is a clip from CIA Director Designee John Brennan's confirmation hearing today. And this, if as much as anything, provides background and sort of a basis in evidence for what I was talking about earlier, insofar as, you know, the Senate were offended, and Dianne Feinstein was offended that they could not have a polite conversation about extrajudicial killings without someone objecting to same. In the form of, you know, Code Pink. So eventually, everybody gets to answer their questions, and it comes around to being Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina's turn. This is only a 14-second sound clip. I think you'll get it right away.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to try to be brief because I've noticed you're on your fourth glass of water, and I don't want to be accused of waterboarding you.
You got that? Once again, it's not so much the words themselves, but the response of others. Senator Richard Burr, Republican from North Carolina, says that he's not going to take too much time questioning John Brennan because he doesn't want people to think, since John Brennan has drunk four glasses of water, he doesn't want people to think that he's waterboarding John Brennan. Really? Because, you know, that's what waterboarding is. It's a joke. I mean, it's just like drinking water. It's not like you're laid down on your back and the water is poured into your mouth until the point that you are literally being simulated, drowned, and willing to say anything, do anything, perform any act, admit anything, confess to any action, just to make the torture stop. And the rest of the lobster for lunch crowd there in the Senate. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, ha, oh, jolly good. He made a waterboarding, ha, ha. Oh, that was a high quality funny. We will all chuckle, and we will continue chuckling when the lobster bisque is brought around at lunch. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, coo-coo-ca-choo, indeed. That, what, the, oh, Richard Burr, you made a funny. Jesus. So, we'll take a little break, come back, it's top of the hour. If you want to get involved in the conversation, I encourage you to do so via Skype, which seems to be working quite well, frankly, much to my surprise, but not my chagrin. Jump in. The handle is Bob Kincaid Horn, Bob Kincaid, H-O-R-N, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, H-O-R-N. That's the contact number on Skype. We're still looking for the other 100 of the $150 we try to raise on any given evening on this program. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
try to understand.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Nine minutes past the hour. Sorry, I seem to be getting nasaler and nasaler. This is just great. 3 weeks here, fine. Getting ready to drive home. I hope this is not some godforsaken bug. Yeah. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We like to call what we do here Conversation Radio. It is radio that is run entirely with your support. Financial support, intellectual support, conversational support. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address. If you want to get involved in the program, we use Skype for that here. And we do so via the handle Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Tim from L.A. with an email writing in. Subject line, they found his burned-out truck. Talking about the shooter in California. He's a former LAPD officer, and they found his burned-out truck in the local ski resort in Big Bear, California. I don't think he's around. Also, he's former Navy. He's trained to kill. Did he cross state lines? I don't know, but he's more than capable of surviving. The manifesto, it's got more than a little Unabomber flavor to it, as Sandra pointed out. Damn, this sneezing's driving me crazy. That's two, and they tend to come in threes. Going back to the mailbag just for a second. Regarding Richard Burr, Republican from North Carolina, Ron and Raleigh notes, that smarmy son of a bitch will be the senior senator from North Carolina as long as he wants. And of course, in the screen cap that I saw of the committee all sitting there in their little committee room, I couldn't help noticing my senior senator, Jay Rockefeller. He's a very tall fella, so he kind of stands out in the crowd. And there I was. I mean, it took me right back to what I was saying. Here's a man who has sat idly by for over a decade while his own constituents have been poisoned, blasted, bombed, their homes ruined, their communities rendered into ghost towns, while questions are being asked about the indiscriminate bombing of a people in a foreign country. One wonders if he cares as much about them or as little as he does about his own constituents. Although I've been told he is concerned that there's a difference between Jay Rockefeller and Joe Manchin. Starting out, there's about probably something on the order of a 75-point IQ differential, if not 100. But beyond that, Senator Rockefeller at least acknowledges the existence of the science that points to the fact that people in mountaintop removal communities are being poisoned, blasted, bombed, killed, cancered, heart diseased, birth defected. He at least acknowledges the existence of the science. Joe Manchin cannot be bothered even to not to say, well, you know, the science is there, but it's wrong. No, Joe Manchin won't even acknowledge that the science exists. And this is after a couple of years now of trying to simply get him to do that. But never is heard a discouraging word, and the minds are not toxic all day. Let's see here. Let's go back to the Skype line. Tracy is with us. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, hon. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm feeling like the weight of the world is on my shoulders. I am exhausted today. I worked later than I expected. Got caught in a ugly traffic jam last night.
Well, I mean, you're in L.A., and I would not feel comfortable. Jesus, the cops were blowing people away that they thought might be. No, this is a day to park it, go inside, and don't open the door.
And basically, and that's the thing, because I was getting a couple of tweets from people of color in L.A., you know, especially men, and it's like that look, you know, because you know we all look alike.
Oh, Jesus.
So it's basically stay at home. And just don't, you know, and keep the doors and windows locked to hold your children, especially your young black men. Because anybody that has a slight resemblance to this guy, they're going to get blown away. It's going to be one of those seriously shoot first and ask questions later. And like
they
you said,
they shot up a newspaper delivery truck earlier, didn't
right.
they?
Right. That blue truck. Because, see, I hadn't heard. When I left this morning, because I left my house at like 6:20 this morning, I had heard about him killing another cop and the wounding of two others. And then the next thing I see are these cops surrounding this blue truck with all these bullet holes. And I'm looking at Jan, I'm like, didn't they say it was a gray truck with a
First it was blue, then it was gray.
But the thing is, it was just this one. So see, I didn't hear what happened because when all this stuff like that is going on, unless it directly affects me, because Jan is a news crazy person, so trust and believe that if anything had been coming anywhere near where I may have been, I would have gotten a phone call. But she didn't tell me about, so this, the truck that they shot was this a delivery person, a newspaper delivery woman?
Apparently. There have been something like four people shot in cases of, well, accidental discharge or mistaken identity or...
Today?
Yeah.
Because of this guy?
Yeah.
See, oh, Jesus Christ, superstar. It is a good thing, because I am at home. I'm sitting in my carport doing my paperwork so I could go in and cook dinner. By the way, roasted Brussels sprouts with olive oil and fresh garlic. And
tonight's food
asparagus.
Porn brought to you by Tracy. Yes.
and grilled ribeye steak. Okay, so.
Oh, that last hurt.
And this is a thick one.
No, I'm not kidding. This is not pissing or moaning. It's just the reality of how the AIC campaign has to work. We've been here for about three weeks, and we came here with lots of rice-a-roni, lots of ready to fix out of a box pasta, some canned
top ramen,
canned chicken, some top ramen. Yeah, and lately it has been absolutely crazy. I mean, Agnes is not a big meat eater, but even she looked at me and said, "I think I would do really awful things just for a steak right now. Because it's not like there, it's not like there's a Ponderosa around the corner on Capitol Hill.
Right. Right, right.
I mean, this is the home of the
$20
dirty water dog.
Right, exactly. And tell Agnes that I appreciate her picture, speaking of meat, of her eating the burger at Five Guys. Because we have Five Guys out here now.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
You've tried, of course, you've had the fries?
See, Jan had never had Five Guys, and just so happens, the day after our anniversary, it's been a year that we've been together, and of course, I was working, and she's a very simple person, and she's like, well, I'll just have a burger, and, you know, here we do have, you know, our choices, we, you know, all the places that I'm going to take you, like, you know, I don't care about In-N-Out, I'm sorry, you Californians and Nevadians that love In-N-Out, it is just okay. It is just, I mean, first of all, that patty's so thin, almost see to it, but that.
Tracy? Oh, dear. Wait, how did that happen? That's real weird. Are you there, Tracy? Huh, there's a problem with this call. Hold. Now, I know we got lots of bandwidth. Well, maybe Tracy will try back. In the meantime, a couple of comments along the way. Kevin in Colorado Springs asking, one wonders if the Obama administration will start a Justice Department probe over the shootings today since it appears to be a department that is out of control. I bet not. I'm with you on that bet, Kevin. No, this is a local problem. You know, the manifesto refers to a consent decree. And the fact that it was, released? Or allowed to expire. And this real quick, based on what Sandra had said a little bit ago about the fact that this latest program for, and naturally, like Sandra says, they're always aimed at, you know, kids of color. Because, you know, we can trust the white folks with the firearms, even though the white folks are the ones who tend to go crazy with the firearms and do things like shooting up elementary schools. Texas Betsy offered up this vignette. She said, when I had my first classroom, it was inner-city Spanish-speaking first graders in Chicago. We did a social studies lesson on safety, and when I asked them how they keep themselves safe, the kids answered with what to do if there was gunfire, how to lie on the floor away from the windows and pretend they were dead. Funny, says Texas Betsy, the teacher manual told me they would talk about crossing the street and not touching the stove. I think that's when I stopped teaching from the manuals. Indeed. Tracy has some at least some agreement here. Marty just wrote in, Tracy fading in and out. Yeah, she did. And he said, I hate In-N-Out's French fries. And I have to this day to try In-N-Out. But let's go back. I think we may have Tracy back. All right. Now, wait just a confounded minute. Are you there, Tracy? All right, that's strange. I don't know why every time that I try to go to Skype, I wind up hearing intro music. That's a new glitch. At least it's keeping me honest. Sheesh. So if Tracy does try to get back in, we'll try to get back into the conversation without listening to the hour three intro again. No, I mentioned that I wanted to see to it that we got to this story because it's on the heels of something that we talked about a couple of nights ago. Latest sneezing fit now over. No, it was a couple of nights ago that we talked about the state senator from Idaho who said that the insurance companies were being treated like Jews getting into the cattle cars to be taken to the death camps. Apparently that analogy works for some people. And even though, and I guess it's a little unfair, but even though she has lately been eclipsed by the likes of Steve King from Iowa, who may very well be the next senator from that state, and 1L Michelle Bachmann, it should be remembered that when we talk about right-wing lunatics, it's really unfair for us to leave Virginia Double X Fox over Pig Licking from North Carolina. It's apparently right-wing North Carolina night, seeing how we were talking about Richard Burr a minute ago. These things just happen. The universe throws them out. The universe throws the pitches. I just swing the bat. Virginia Double X Fox of North Carolina, really, she's gone to ground a little bit. She's been a little bit quiet, but she's as nutty as they come. And she's hateful, too. So a couple of nights ago, we were talking about the Idaho state senator who made her Holocaust reference. Well, guess what? I don't know if Virginia Double X Fox read that story. If she's listening, hi, Virginia, we hate your freaking guts. Virginia Double X Fox of North Carolina has taken something on the order of in excess of $48,000 from the for-profit education industry, which was created almost exclusively not to serve people in need of education, higher education, but rather to get their feet in the trough and start sucking up Pell Grants and student loan dollars. And so, when it became known that there were a few people out there who wanted to start looking a little harder at the way these for-profit so-called colleges operate, it's basically the extension of the draw spunky educational back of the matchbook educational model into a multi tens of hundreds of thousands of per student industry. For instance, back at home in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, we had one of these mills. It was an outfit called Mountain State University. It was run primarily to make the Gulfstream jet payments for its owner. And it recently got taken down because it was doing a terrible, terrible job of educating human beings. Places like University of Phoenix Online, again, are good at sucking up the money, but not so good at doing the teaching. In her first year on the Higher Education and Workforce Training Subcommittee of the House of Representatives, like I said, Virginia Double X Fox picked up at least $48,668 from PACs or individuals affiliated with for-profit colleges. So lo and behold, Virginia Double X Fox gave a speech this past Tuesday She was speaking at the National Association of Independent Colleges and Universities. And she had to work in a little bit of defense of those for-profit modeled unis, colleges, in her remarks. And this is what she said. Inside Higher Ed put out the story. The Inside Higher Ed story by Libby A. Nelson from 2 days ago, or yesterday rather, wrote, in criticizing the private college president's representative Virginia Fox, the North Carolina Republican who leads the Subcommittee on Higher Education, adapted the famous statement from the German theologian Martin Niemöller on Germans who ignored Nazi persecution. They came for the four profits, and I didn't speak up, Fox said. Nobody really spoke up like they should have. Wow. So now, in the bizarre mind, or what passes for one, those thin gray settlings, of Virginia Double X Fox of North Carolina, merely trying to have some oversight over for-profit colleges is just like the Holocaust. Moreover, the right wing has this analogy problem. I'll never forget when I sat down to take the LSAT years ago. It turned out the damn thing was almost entirely analogies. A ham salad sandwich is to lunch as a gazelle is as a gazelle running across the Serengeti is to a brunch, B, a cheetah, C, a steamship, D, President Franklin Pierce. Cheetah. But the Republican Party doesn't seem able to work those things, because the only frame of reference they apparently have is Hitler and the Holocaust. When everything that they compare to the Holocaust couldn't be less like the Holocaust if they had tried. Trying to make sure that for-profit colleges actually perform the services for which they are paid, that is, to educate students. Trying to make sure of that, in the murky, fog-bound, swampy, underbrushy world of Virginia Double X Fox, it's just like the Holocaust. Just like. Holy cow. And it seems like there's one of these practically every day. First, they came for the for-profit colleges. Jesus, Martin Niemöller was writing about people being hauled away to their deaths by a brutal and remorseless dictatorial fascist regime. And I guess it makes sense for Virginia Double X Fox to make this analogy, because after all, we've got an Islamo-fascist Kenyan Muslim president with a deep-seated hatred of white people and decidedly anti-colonialist policies, right? And don't forget, no birth certificate. But it goes on and on and on. One state to the west of North Carolina, where Virginia XX Fox holds court, we find a freak by the name of Senator Stacy Campfield of the state legislature of Tennessee. He is, as mentioned on this program previously, back with his Don't Say Gay bill, but as we discussed a couple of nights ago, he has made it bigger, badder, and bolder, because now teachers are supposed to pick up the phone and say, yes, hello, is this the Smith resident? Yes, Mr. Smith, I just wanted to let you know that your little boy Murgatroyd, yeah, I think he's queer. Really? So for reasons that surpass understanding by rational people, Stacy Campfield, who is just apparently itching for his 15 minutes that never should have exceeded 15 seconds, and he sat down for a conversation with TMZ, of all people, at which point this analogy burbled to the surface of the toxic stew between Stacy Campfield's ears. TMZ, with a very obviously liberal question, asks, referring to homosexual children in Tennessee schools, if they're going to engage in homosexual acts anyway, why not teach them how to protect themselves from HIV? Senator Stacy Campfield, you know, you could say the same thing about kids who are shooting heroin. We need to show them the best ways to shoot up. No, we don't. Why do we have to hypersexualize little children? Why can't we just let little kids be little kids for a while? Why do we have to have little kids be... TMZ, do you believe in sex education, period? Campfield, well, if you can show me where it works, great. And, of course, you can't in Tennessee, because Jeebus doesn't like sex education. Jeebus prefers for little children to get HIV and die and go to heaven and be right there and snuggled up in his bosom. It says bosom a lot in the Bible. Bosom of Abraham, bosom of the Lord, bosoms. That word's almost as funny as kumquat. So there you have it. Gay folks, allies, friends. Another analogy problem from the right wing. I guess we should count ourselves lucky that at least he didn't compare them to Nazis or something. No. Little gay children are just the same as heroin junkies, smack addicts. I don't have the patience to run all 7 minutes of this silliness, but you do at least deserve to hear a little bit what Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone sounds like. As soon as the damned ad is over. Oh, someday we're going to have such a high-tech operation. We'll do the pre-show and we'll cut the ads out, and yeah. But here we go.
Senator, welcome to TMZ Live.
Thanks for having me on the show.
What about the response to the constituent?
Yes. Yeah, that person's a well-known homosexual advocate, and the biggest bullies in the world out there is really the homosexual community. I don't think that being insulted, threatened, any of that stuff. I've gotten plenty of that. Anytime you talk about it, they go bazonkers, and
bazonkers.
I just don't put up with it. So she's got her own anger issues. She's got to deal with them, but, you know, I don't have to be anybody's punching bag.
I mean, was it really? I'm just wondering, look, and everybody's entitled to their views, and I'm just curious why that email was felt so aggressive to you, because I'm reading it, and I mean, somebody was pissed off, but it didn't feel super aggressive.
You know, that person's a well-known homosexual, like I said, that person's a well-known homosexual advocate. They always, this is their thing, and, you know, I'm just not going to put up, I'm just not going to put up with it.
But it sounds like you're not letting all of your constituents have their say. I mean, you
well,
sort of dismissed
not, her. That's not even one of my constituents.
Do you dislike gays?
Do I dislike them? No, not personally. I don't care. Couldn't care less. Do what you want to do. Just leave me alone. Leave it out of the schools.
Do you believe that being gay or gay sex or whatnot is dangerous or is an inherent problem? Is that what you're referring to?
And the act of homosexuality is very dangerous.
How?
You ever heard of AIDS?
Okay, you ever hear of Africa? A lot of straight people get AIDS in Africa. In fact, that's the majority of places where they're getting it. And they're getting it here, too. And drug addicts are getting it, and straight people are getting it, and innocent people who have nothing to do.
I'm not advocating people shoot heroin. I'm not advocating any of that stuff.
Well, but a lot of people are getting AIDS. That's nothing to do with whether you're gay or not.
The homosexual community gets AIDS at a 50 times higher rate than a heterosexual community. The numbers are equal, but
explain Africa to me.
Close.
Explain Africa to me.
Well, it's going to be pretty gruesome. Do you want to hear gruesome details? I can tell you why it's happening.
Is it gay-based?
Okay. I'll say you may have to edit it, but the problem in Africa is sodomy is much more prevalent in Africa than it is in America. And the act of sodomy, there's a lot more blood letting and blood tearing and things along those lines, and that's how the AIDS is transmitted more so.
But it's hetero.
Can't take much more of that. But did you get that? There's a lot more sodomy in Africa. Geez. How do you get there? Well, let's do this real quick. I don't know how quickly we can do it, but I think we can get through this. Stacy Campfield is also a denier of evolution. We've had this discussion previously on the Horn, but it bears a sort of reminder. When a Stacy Campfield of Tennessee denies the biological reality of evolution, we tend, and folks at TMZ, they tend to simply say, look at the moron, right? But it goes a lot deeper than that. We're talking about someone from Tennessee. We're talking about the old Confederacy. When you hear a denier of evolution, and I think we can say this generally, even when the denier of evolution does not necessarily realize that this is where it comes from, it's kind of like the people who, you know, fetishize the Second Amendment without realizing that part of the reason the Second Amendment exists is because it was put in place by white slave owners who were framing the Constitution for the purpose of empowering slave hunting posses, vigilante groups. So too, your average evolution-denying Southerner does not realize that the roots of evolution denial, remember the Scopes monkey trial in Tennessee was what, the 1920s? And the objections were all couched in biblical terms, of course. But they were also couched in the culture of the time. And the problem with saying that human beings are evolved from a common African ancestor means that in a culture in which literally, when in which the one drop rule applies, in which literally one drop of so-called black blood is enough to render you black, no matter how pale and white you remain. In a culture like that, an admission of the reality of evolution means that somewhere back there, people like General Nathan Bedford Forrest, the father of the Klan, would have to admit that he has ancestors of dark skin because we all came from Africa. Just by different routes. I'll never forget the time when my dear friend looked at me on that boat as we went across to Sapelo Island in Georgia, and she said, "You know, if you just go straight east from here, you land in Africa, the mother country, the mother continent." And I said, "Yeah, the mother of us all." Because, see, there's no other place on the planet we can point to and say, well, a separate band of human beings evolved over here, and they turned into the white people. Understanding the whole time, of course, that white is a concept that is fluid, to say the least. Reference Dr. John's note from a couple of nights ago. Well, this homophobia from Senator Stacey Campfield comes from the same place. He couldn't be more clearly a white supremacist if he had showed up in that conversation with TMZ in a bedsheet and a pillowcase and had been introduced as Supreme Exalted Kleagle Campfield. Right? Yeah. Because if HIV is a drug, is a disease that strikes heterosexuals, homosexuals, and non-sexuals, then that is an indictment of Senator Campfield's entire universe. Because Senator Campfield does know what white privilege is, and Senator Campfield is damned proud of it. And Senator Campfield is not about to give up an iota of it. And Senator Campfield is not going to admit that there is any possibility whatsoever that there is any kind of human similarity between people in a continent burning up with HIV and people, white people, white Christian, God-fearing people in the old Confederacy. Because homosexuality terrifies Senator Campfield as much, or quite possibly more, than the conceptualization of his having that one drop a couple hundred thousand years ago. See how it works? And that is the answer, as sure as God made little green apples. But where people of color are concerned, and where people of different sexual orientation are concerned, the right wing lives in a persistent state of absolutely terrorized fear, to the point that a community that has been bashed, beaten, murdered, crucified, lynched for centuries. That community may now be referred to by Senator Stacey Campfield as the biggest bullies, and compared with narcotics addicts. Every time I think that they can't get any worse, they do. Whether it's Double X Virginia Fox bemoaning oversight of diploma mills that care more about profits and running student loan scams, as Texas Betsy points out, than they do the well-being of students, and comparing the same to the Holocaust, or comparing insurance companies to murdered Jews, or comparing children who, if his bill becomes law, will be at great risk, because one of the things that happens in the Deep South is if you get outed in your family and you're still at home, you become homeless 9 times out of 10 in a real hurry. Because bless his heart for the effort, I don't care how often Dan Savage says it gets better. It's hard to be an outed gay teenager in a place like the old Confederacy and see it ever getting any better. Hell, if you're straight in the old Confederacy, just creating the rumor that you aren't is ruinous. Utterly ruinous. So they really do have an analogy problem. You want to hear Senator Campfield hang himself on his own petard just a little bit more? Can you? You want to hear the gory details of why? Why those dark-skinned people have so much more HIV than us good, godly, upstanding, Christian, God-fearing people here in Merca?
A sexual senator? Yes, but like I said, sodomy is a very...
Well, no, we won't. Sound card went sideways. That's probably a little hint from the universe that there's only so much sickening content we can pump into the out into the ether and still remain sane. I had a thought the other day in connection with all this gun violence. I thought it would be interesting to see how the NRA would respond to an idea like this. There are lots of, there are lots of states that have stand your ground laws. I think Texas and Florida are two of them. Alabama probably has one. What if the folks who support a woman's right to choose and a woman's right to access to women's health care centers, and I thought about this because of the story I saw earlier that the state of Alabama is actively engaged in trying to close down its last 5 women's reproductive health clinics. The Women's Health and Safety Act has been introduced in the Alabama State House. proudly sponsored by Representative Mary Sue McClurkin, whose name sounds like something out of a Dr. Seuss novel. Dr. Seuss book. Hell, Dr. Seuss probably is a novel in some right-wing households. The bill targets regulatory standards of architectural structure, equipment, and staffing that are totally unnecessary and cannot be met by the clinics. That's what Gloria Gray says. She's director of the West Alabama Women's Health Center in Tuscaloosa. How does requiring a 6-foot hallway make it safer for a woman to have an abortion? It doesn't. Here's my idea, though. And I realize it runs contrary to my own morals and ethics and my own personal code espoused on this program. But still, what do you think? In these stand your ground states, women who are going to go and exercise their right guaranteed to them constitutionally in the United States of America to attend to the needs of their reproductive systems in a health care clinic of their choosing need to get concealed carry permits. Or in states where you can open carry, no permit required. Locked and loaded, walk to the clinic, walk through the praying Christians with a big sign that says, "You right-wing fundamentalists terrify me, and I am in fear of for my life from you." See how long it takes those right-to-carry laws to be modified. It'll happen in the same session. Yeah, got to have a 6-foot-wide hallway for a woman to be, they don't walk so good when they're, Jesus Christ. But this is the retrograde motion of a nation in the 22nd decade of the 21st century, moving away from that hopeful future and toward the dark and ominous dystopias that are so easy to find out there. And then this. We're still in Alabama, Stan. And we're dealing with a man by the name of Shadrach McGill, who has explained why it is that he wants to end abortion. No, okay, we're not. Let's put it this way. He says, just based on the scripture alone, Shadrach McGill is a member of the West Alabama legislature, just based on the scripture alone, the psalm that talks about God knowing us before he placed us in our mother's womb is enough for me to know that there is a life inside of a mother. So my question concerning aborted babies is, where do they go? Heaven or hell? So Shadrach McGill wants a personhood bill in Alabama to keep the little aborted fetuses from being burned forever in an eternal lake of fire created for the devil and his angels by the loving God who created the fetus. Got that? Thought so. So we find ourselves at the close of this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and it has indeed been thorny, and I thank you for your time, and I thank you very much for your support that has created or allows us to continue to create this little ongoing dialogue. Thanks very much. Indeed. Diane, for helping us to get all the way to our fundraising goal for this evening. That's how we keep it going. Thank you indeed very much. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen, our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for help with the posts. Thanks to John Fox, and again, happy birthday. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. It's never a bad time to go to AcheAct.org and take action and help us end Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy. It's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the horn. Hopefully talk to you again tomorrow evening, this time from the Mountain Studios.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only...